That's right. Yeah. When you're in a toxic relationship, it recruits you like a cult. They give you all the good things first, all the good food and all the good, you know, love. And then all of a sudden over time, they start to like keep you up until 4 in the morning and, you know, all these bizarre things start happening.
The loud music.
You know, the lights, the strobe lights. Yeah. Right. The torture. And you're like, and then you get out of it and you go, what was that?
No. 100%. In fact, I've been working with my therapist for 4 years, unpacking some of that stuff.
Right.
And particularly how it pertains to dad.
Okay.
Our dad.
Yeah. What do you want to say about our dad before we get started on this? Is there anything you want to do to introduce or roll with that?
Well, I think when it comes to dad, you and I share a very similar perspective with dad. He was loving. He was, what is it, the glasses?
I swear to God, no. Last night, guys, as we were like thinking about this podcast tonight, we were just sitting reminiscing and just talking about life. And we were laying on your bed in front of the fire and we were just like, having a nice talk. And you said, Heidi, I'll never forget the moment I realized dad was never going to be able to protect me or save me.
That was huge.
Can you tell, do you mind just kind of talking
that,
about
that might require getting up out of the seat. Okay. So there were a few moments in my life, but this one was different. I was in my mid 40s when this one happened. Mm-hmm. Okay. And going through a horrible divorce.
Yeah.
Custody, parental alienation. I'm that expert. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was like getting these horrible threats from the ex-husband, threatening my life, which, you know, that went on for a long time after that. But I was with dad and I'm thinking, okay, he's going to protect me physically, emotionally.
Because you had escaped up there, to his house.
I was with him in my 40s. Mm-hmm. Like, what is life? What the fuck is happening? You know, it was fucking
starting
weird.
Over. Yeah.
Weird. So, yeah, we were outside hanging out by the moonlight. It was this perfect evening, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just unleashing, telling him my fears, my concerns for my safety.
Yeah, you're really telling him everything. You're unloading everything. You're like, I'm not safe.
Yes.
It has been torture.
I need safety.
I need safety. I mean, you're really like digging into what's going on.
For sure.
Yeah.
So the best he had.
Right.
His toolkit. He pulled out.
He reached into his toolkit.
And the best he could do was to kind of just stare at this beautiful moon.
So he stood up. He was drinking a beer, right?
Oh, well, we were both having a jolly time.
You were having Miller Lights together
we're
on the patio.
We're hanging out.
Here, don't go here. Go in the mic.
He stands up and he looks at the moon. And he's like, fuck you. Fuck you. You know, like howling at the moon, like that's going to protect me. I'm just like, wow, that was the moment. So, and then the tongues, like the.
We had also like religious trauma.
Yeah.
And he would do this fake tongues every now and again. Doesn't even sound real, but so he was out there. Yeah. So let me just recap. Okay. In case you missed it. You're pouring your heart out. You got out of this toxic relationship. Yeah. Your life is being threatened.
He's doing like, and he's like,
he's doing karate kicks at the moon, howling at the moon. Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you.
Oh, it's like, you know, fuck you.
It's like that Stickle Pfeiffer, you know, from the Christmas show. It was so fucked up. And then like the director, M. Night Shyamalan, his tongues always sound like it's like Shyamalan. Like he says everything but M. Night Shyamalan when he's saying the tongues. It was like,
probably because he'd be busted. M. Night Shyamalan, Shyamalan.
M. Night Shyamalan.
So basically he's speaking in the tongues and he's howling at the moon and he's drunk. And you go, this is the best as he's got.
It's the best that he's got.
Yeah.
I accept this.
Yeah.
But it was very eye-opening.
Was it sad?
I felt pity for him, which is funny because that's a lot of our childhood, right? You and I had to manage our own pain.
Yeah.
We had to self-regulate, self-soothe, that whole thing, because he couldn't do it.
Right.
He couldn't do it. So Yeah, I was disappointed.
Yeah.
It was disappointment. It was pity.
And then when we get out of this thing, we're like, okay, it's up to us. We leave unscathed. We think we get out of this thing. But the truth is that stuff leaves a mark. It's that shrapnel that leaves a mark and creates a certain subset of symptoms underneath of growing up with an alcoholic.
Well, I mean, I could tell you stories.
Yeah.
Even with my own children, how that affected my children and the times I had to get him out of my home during the holidays. Mm-hmm. You shared a story recently about the football.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever,
I didn't tell anybody this. Oh guys. All right. Well, we're going to go there. I didn't tell anybody
because
this story.
That actually except includes for you. Religious trauma.
Yeah.
To that.
Guys, I will tell you this. So,
by that
great.
Spirit,
you guys are so lucky because you got the sissy here spilling all the tea. So one day we were sitting out on the patio in Pennsylvania, you know, everybody's sitting around, my brothers are out there and dad's throwing around the football and he's getting drunk like he does, you know, it's Saturday or whatever. And he's getting drunk and I think I'm having a great time and I'm laughing. And all of a sudden I feel a whoosh coming at me and it's a football spiraling at my head and whacks me right in the head. Yes. And I look over and I'm thinking, wow, that was a foul ball.
Mind
but no,
you, I had only just heard this story the other day.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't, awful. It wasn't a rogue ball.
No.
It was at the helm was my dad kind of like looking at me. like, so I go in the direction of the ball, right? I'm like, oh Jesus, that was an accident.
Neat.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah,
neat.
That was neat.
It wasn't an accident. Okay. He threw the football at my head and I looked over and I was like shocked because I'd never seen him be mean.
Never.
That's what
never.
We were saying. Like we had a nice alcoholic never. Dad. We had a loving, yeah. albeit slightly inappropriate, makes you worry sometimes about like crossing a line a little bit. He never did.
Not with me. I've never had that experience with him.
Yeah.
He was critical about like makeup, like I told you.
But yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he would comment about boobs and butts and all kinds of stuff.
Not
like,
to me.
Weird.
I never had tits. So oh. he never, that was not on the table for me. Just saying, guys, like Heidi's the one with the bootay and the boobies. Not, it was not I.
The boobies and the
remember
bootay.
The boob cake? Having you home.
Oh my God,
tits?
Dad, I moved home
wait,
for
wait,
a spell.
Wait. You got to go back to the football.
Can we just tell these two? So we're not going to get to the content tonight,
there's
guys. There's too many
much.
Stories. So I looked over. My dad's looking at me like this. You know, you're watching the podcast. If you're listening to the podcast, you can't see it, but it was like a gleam and a twinkle, like a glare and a twinkle at the same time. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
This is new. Yeah. And all of a sudden I was like, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of Dodge. There was nowhere to go, nowhere to escape. So I went all the way upstairs and I was staying in this bedroom. So I went out on the roof. You know, and I'm smoking cigarettes on the roof. Okay.
Oh, you were old enough to smoke.
Honey, baby, let me tell you something. I must have been 19.
Oh,
you know,
ew, that's even stranger to me in some perverse way. That's like, ew.
So I'm up there. I'm smoking a cigarette. I'm like, what is life? Because I always thought I have a nice alcoholic dad.
Right.
He had never done anything mean or hurtful or whatever. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wow, he did that on purpose. That's weird. That's like, that's to me is, oh my God, I can love my alcoholic dad until he hurts me on purpose.
Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean?
Words with
physical. Oh, terrible. So anyway, I climbed up on the roof and I'm smoking my cigarette and my religious saved Holy Roland stepmom at the time comes out up on the roof.
Holy
and she,
Roland.
And she, somehow, she sits down next to me and she's like, I bind that spirit of suicide in Jesus' name.
Yeah, yeah.
Shyamalan me and getting the demons out.
Right.
And the worst part about it, the porch was about 8 feet.
Well,
the roof was 8 feet.
See, I
wasn't going to kill myself by jumping off an 8-foot roof.
Part. That's not the worst part.
What's the worst part?
The worst part is that in her codependence of his addiction, she failed to see that you were the one that needed care.
Right.
Okay, Heidi. Like,
that was her care.
That's
get
like,
the demons.
Get the fucking demons out. This is all you've got? Fucking howling, barking at the moon is all you've got? Come on. It's a miracle. It's a miracle that you and I have had children and
oh God,
they're okay for the most part.
Right. Thank God.
A couple of mine are a little beat. I've got four. And
listen, you know, listen.
Tweak action in there.
Listen, everybody tweaks out once in a while. Yeah. Here's the thing. Why are we trying to be funny to talk about these things? No, it just is. Because if it's not funny, it's tragic. And sometimes, you know, tragedy is like comedy, because it's like, if we look back on our lives of all the things we've been through, like all the times he's driven drunk and crazy and shot BB guns in the woods, loaded, you know, and like took us off a cliff, swinging cliff diving.
Well, your cliff story is a little histrionic for my blog. And I kind of pride myself on my histrionic self. Okay. Like that's like the cliff stories. Like even last night, we're taking Liz's boyfriend home and you're like, Heather, slow the fuck down. There's cliffs. It's like a 6-foot drop.
Listen. You know. That's drama. Drama. So here we go. We're going to talk a little bit about some of these things.
I never thought about that.
That's a trauma response. Thanks. Yeah, and you're like, shut the fuck up. No,
Jesus,
I'm just kidding.
In Jesus' name, I bind it. Okay. I bind it.
Thank the Lord. Okay. Guys, let's go over our wounds. I came up with these a couple of years ago because all wounds fit into one of these major categories, and the acronym is SISTER.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that cool? But it's SISTER with a C because some of our sisters are brothers and cousins.
I love that.
Okay, so it's SISTER with a C. So the first, so I'm going to go over each one and we're just going to riff and say, you know, can you relate to that at all? I've talked many times about, you know, how it might show up for other people, but we'll get some real time feedback.
I know nothing.
You've never heard this. You know nothing about it.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So this is a naked reveal. Like I do not know what's coming. I'm excited. I'm excited.
This is a naked reveal. By the way, she's drinking a Spindrift on a wine glass with rhinestones.
This is my addiction.
Yeah. Gotta be. At least it's healthy.
Gotta be bougie.
Gotta be bougie.
Come on.
So the first one is control issues.
Ooh.
All right. Now, this goes one of two ways for most people. Sometimes it can be like they're out of control and they need people to constantly be telling them what to do. And they become more of a pleaser in this dynamic where if control is an issue, they never had any control. They don't know how to wield their power, have control. So they get into these narcissistic dynamics where all the thinking is done for them. All the thinking is done for them. They're pleasing their partner. They have all the control. They hate it. The pleaser secretly hates it.
Why?
Because they want their own power. But they feel like the only way they're safe and have love is if they please and give it the power to somebody else. So mom was domineering or dad was domineering. And the only way to make them happy was to not have your own power. If you had your own power, it was a scary thing. And it wasn't good if you had power. So you had to give it up to somebody else in charge of you. And they don't want that. They're not born that way to do that.
I didn't really come into my own power until just a few years ago.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah,
it's true. I mean, I was busy raising.
I think it's
kids.
For most of us.
I don't know. Am I a late bloomer?
No, because I have clients all the time that are in their 40s and 50s and 60s and sometimes 70s that are just trying to find their power. Yeah. And the weird thing is, by the way, they have it at work or they have it in their lives. They have it like outside where it shows up as in intimate relationships, but they might be pleasing as well and other things. But the other side of that control issue is where they have all the power and they're with the person that's pleasing them. And so
that's the one I want.
Okay. You're that person. All right. Well, let's just go there for a minute.
Yeah. That one.
So a controller knows everything to do. I know how to get all this done. It's my way or the highway. You're here to serve and please me. And you do what Jesus. Guys, if you're listening to the podcast, she's nodding her head. She's like, check.
I'm like,
check. That's
Roger,
sounding
Roger,
good.
Yes.
That's sounding amazing. Yeah.
It's not my truth, but it sounds really cool.
Well, because we are attracted to power, right? We love power. Power is a wonderful thing. It gets a bad rap. But when it's not yielded correctly, it becomes a power over another human being.
Yes.
And not reciprocal, not like, you know, you're in power, I'm in power, and we give and give power exchange, you know. So this person becomes like a fixer in their relationships.
Ew.
They,
Ew.
Ew. She's like, that's your favorite thing. Ew.
Ew. Everything's ew.
Ew.
Fixers. Yeah, that's
wild. Well, don't talk bad about my people, because I have to tell you something. Half of them were fixers.
I respect that that's the position.
Yeah.
That people find.
But it's terrible.
I would not respond well.
No.
To a fixer.
But a fixer, you know, a fixer gets with an alcoholic.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
In my circumstance, it wouldn't even apply.
Like, no, like a fixer is with an addict or alcoholic, and they're thinking, I have to be in control of you because you can't do it.
Oh, that's right? Terrible. That's
so I have to make sure everything's functioning all the time because you're out to lunch and somebody's got to do it. Now, a lot of times this is a kid that grew up like the adult in the house. Mm-hmm. And the problem and the issue with control is you can never let your hair down. You can never have fun. Right. You can never be a kid.
Right. That's
you're always hyper vigilant. You're always in control.
I'm sorry for that, guys.
Right.
Really, truly. That would be just a terrible position.
It is.
Because our stepmom, who could have become this way with our
it was that addiction, way.
She was not.
No, she was a pleaser. She was a pleaser. Well, these are all codependent, believe it or not. So,
see, guys, I don't know. Heidi is, you know, we have the stories. We actually probably should have an entirely separate podcast. I'm just guest starring tonight with her. But
this is what you're saying right now.
This isn't my field of expertise.
But what you're saying right now is what every single person says that comes to me. And that's why we have this podcast. Okay. Because they're like, I'm not really codependent because Christine is codependent, or Lucy's codependent, or Renee's codependent, or Jim's codependent. And what they do is they please sweep under the rug, enable, hide things, you know,
clean up the mess,
buy the alcohol, dole out the pills, you know. But the truth is, a codependent is also somebody who fixes, controls, manages, takes over.
I never thought about it in that.
Nobody ever does.
Well, there you go.
That's very cool.
I never thought about it.
Nope, nobody does. And I think, I don't know if I didn't make it up, but what happened is I was studying codependency when I was working at the treatment center, and all these different patterns emerged of people. Mm-hmm. Another pattern is intimacy is an issue, for example, for people who get in toxic relationships. Obviously, you get out of this thing, you have intimacy challenges.
I?
That's the I.
Okay.
The I is intimacy issues. And intimacy, like, I'm going to withhold myself from you because I'm scared. Mm-hmm. This is all codependent.
Okay. Now this is one. Now that you've opened up Pandora's box.
Well, let's go. Pandora's box.
That one would be, that's something that's shown up in my life.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Withholders are extremely sensitive people. They want love. Like, they want to be close. They want to have that connection. But ultimately, their biggest fear is you're going to take that intel and use it against them somehow. Mm-hmm. You're going to take that and be hurtful and reject them, or
rejection
or
abandonment.
That's like the number. Rejection is really the core of that withholder. So it's like, I know how I feel, but instead of telling you how I feel, I'm just going to disappear. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to go into my room. I'm going to put it in my things. I'm going to not, you know, I'm going to withhold my emotion from you. I'll withhold sex. I'll withhold compliments. I'll withhold whatever, just so I feel like I'm okay and in control. And lots of people who are in toxic relationships do that as a protective mechanism.
Have you?
Oh my God, my whole life. I did all of these things. Oh no, they're all me.
All of them.
Oh shit. Yeah.
I can't even wait to get to
the other fucking thing. Oh God, honey, I am multiple personalities. Yes. All these patterns I have enacted in my life, controlled. I've been a victim, a controller, a fixer, a withholder. By the way, guys, if you're even curious about these patterns, you can go over to HeidiRain.com and take my test, my attachment personality pattern test that I created based upon these different codependent toxic relationship patterns, and find out which one you are and see if it resonates with you. And then you can also purchase a book if you want that I've written on each of these patterns and how they show up.
I think I took one of your tests a few years
ago. I think you did. What did you get?
I got something I fucking did not like.
It was a withholder.
Was it?
Yeah. Because you go, you know, I don't really think that's it.
No, not me.
No. But the withholder gets into a relationship with a clinger.
And
And we have facts. Now we're just spitting facts.
Now we're spitting facts.
Now we're spitting facts.
Yeah, and clingers are like a Sagittarius and an Enneagram 4's worst fucking nightmare.
Well, hello. But you have to have it. You know why you have to have it?
Because it creates the security problem.
And it creates the dance. It creates security. They do all the wanting and you get to do all the withholding.
I don't look, here's the thing.
Tell me the thing.
I don't like the word withholding. It sounds cruel. It has like a very cruel connotation to it. I'm evolved. I'm pushing 51. I'd like to think I've
Let's
grown.
Let's go.
Like withholding seems aggressive. Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe.
You want to call it something else?
Yeah.
What do you want to call it? Do you know what I like to call it?
What?
The turtle.
Okay.
The turtle.
That's kind.
Okay. It's kind. The turtle is, or a porcupine.
Why is it pork?
Well, it's a little prickly.
Yeah. Do you think I'm prickly?
Take your time.
Where's Miguel? Miguel. Get in here.
Am I prickly, my son? Serve me. Get at my feet and tell me who I am. No, I don't think so. I think you're raw truth and honest, and other people that can come off sometimes just as I am, as, I know for me, maybe a turtle is a better thing because you restrict, you come back in your shell, and then you come out and you're playful and you want to do things and then you want to come back into the shell. Okay. And it's all a protective mechanism.
What I think it's evolved to for me.
Come closer to the microphone, love.
Is a form of self-care.
Yeah. Okay.
It's actually not a form of withholding anymore.
And really, tell me how it's not.
I've gotten to a place where I have to believe that it's okay.
No, of course. Okay. Let me just say, of course it's okay. This is under duress, not like self-care routines, but when you're under duress and the shit is hitting the fan, do you get out of Dodge? Do you disappear? Do you withdraw yourself?
When shit gets crazy?
Yeah.
I am the crazy. No, I'm teasing.
I bring the crazy. What are you talking about?
No. I don't. I'm not in a position to do
that. Well, most people that are in these relationships are withholding as a survival mechanism but what happens is they have to withhold because they're in the shell. Somebody's an addict or alcoholic. They're doing okay. They come out of their shell. They start to trust a little bit. And then all of a sudden they get hurt again and they go back in their shell. And so it's not a bad thing. It's a protective mechanism and it's not a problem outside of itself. It's good to protect yourself, to go within, to know how to be with yourself. But the problem is you're not a turtle.
Yeah.
You're human that deserves to be able to be vulnerable and out, and you don't need a shell, right? The lie is that you need the shell. You need the shell because of the people you're surrounding yourself with that are creating the shrapnel that you need to hide from. But if you're in a healthy relationship, there's no shell required. So you get to lose the shell.
What that looks like for me would be a nice hot bath.
Yeah. Well, that's self-care.
Self-care.
It's self-care.
Like, if that's withholding.
No, that's not withholding.
It's just
Withholding is somebody's in a relationship with an addict or alcoholic and they say to them, they say to their partner, I am not going to tell you how I feel because it doesn't matter. I'm going to pretend that this doesn't bother me. I'm going to go in my shell.
Okay.
I'm not going to confront it. I am going to withhold love and affection from you, but not really hold your feet to the fire to get treatment and get help. But instead I'm going to play these games with you and withhold my affection and my love and my whatever until you perform and do better. Because most people don't understand addiction. They think it's a morality thing. You need to behave and be a good boy versus somebody's really sick and they need treatment. So they use withholding as a mechanism to get somebody well, and it never works. They use controlling as a mechanism to get somebody better and it never works, or pleasing and it never works. So these are patterns that are maladaptive ways to function in dysfunction.
That's tough stuff.
Man. Right. I know it's deep.
Yeah.
It's deep.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
So identity issues is really common as well. Being a chameleon, not really knowing who you are when you get out of this dynamic, because so much of your life is poured into.
Wrapped up into the addict.
Wrapped up into them. And also, if you've been highly criticized as a kid growing up, or you've had that experience that being you wasn't okay, you had to morph and bend into who you needed to be instead of who you really are. what I love about you, Heather, you never really did that.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know,
thank you. I don't disagree.
Yeah. You just kind of let your, you just yourself.
I've kind of always just been who the fuck I am.
Right.
I just fucking don't care. Right. But I do. That's the weird thing, right? I'm like,
how do you do that? How do you care and not care?
I think we get to pick and choose what we're affected by.
Come closer to me.
Oh, see, I'm so inexperienced.
No, you're not. You're an artist.
I think we get to pick and choose mm-hmm. what we're affected by mm. and what we're going to allow in to affect us. And that's me. That's my
opinion. What do you think from what you've been through and everything you've, you know, and we've survived a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, the parental
alienation. Yeah. And not just addition expertise. Not just in addition to your childhood, but also your relationships and in your adulthood. What are some of the hardest things you had to relearn or figure out on your path to healing?
Well, it's interesting that I talk about this a lot. Whenever we were kids, there was so much self-soothing. Like there wasn't anybody there to take care of us if we were sick, besides grandma, of mm-hmm. course. So allowing a partner to show up and to really soldier up for me mm-hmm. and take care of me in times of sickness, weakness, mm-hmm. I always equated, you know, anything that was vulnerable as weakness. Mm-hmm. I always equated that as you're so fucking weak. Get it mm-hmm. together, you know. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be weak. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be vulnerable, mm-hmm. but it's taken me almost, you know, 50 years to fucking figure that out.
I say this all the time. This is probably what you're saying is the most important thing. Here's what I always say. You get into these relationships when you're a survivor, like you went through what we went through and you come out of it and you know how to deal in shit.
Well, my first marriage of 16 years was a mirror of that childhood, right? I was sick, or if I was sick, the door got shut and it was like, hey, you're on your own, ciao, see you in, you know,
right. Week. Yeah. And don't be so weak. What's the matter with you? Get it together.
Weak. Yeah. Well, you know, you're the strong one. Don't be like this. So, right. But it's taken a long time.
Yeah. Well, here's what I think it is like for all of us, we know how to handle shit. We know how to get the oars. We know how to battle through. What we don't know how to do is let ourselves be loved, because that's what's foreign in a full way, in a real way, and bada bing, bada boom, in a consistent way.
But I think that's exactly what's being described here. Is that
that's what you're saying. Love, that's right? No, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're saying what I say all the time.
Yeah.
That is, it's not how much you can put up with. It's how much you can let somebody love you.
Exactly.
Take care of you, exactly. Be with you, let it in. That for us, for survivors, is actually the scariest thing. It's not dealing with the asshole. Right. We can do that all day.
Right.
We can deal with the jerk all day. Can we let our actual husband that loves us and gives a shit actually in?
Care?
Can we allow that?
Right.
That is the hardest thing for most of us. And that's what we don't understand. We're like, you know what? It's just this person. I pick this jerk and the next guy, I'm going to let him love me. I'm going to pick, but you get in there and it's hard.
Right.
It's hard to let him in.
You've got to do the work.
You've got to do that inner work. You've got to make that
a
priority.
And making myself vulnerable has always been the most difficult
path. Yeah.
And so I do that. I express that through art, through music. That's super vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. So you asked what that looks like, caring and not caring.
Come closer, baby.
Okay, mommy, you're okay. Scaring me. it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
It's a bit of both. I have days. Some days I just don't, I fucking don't care. I don't. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. some days I do. Mm-hmm. I think the part is being able to admit when you do.
Hello.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
What is this? What is this right. foreign feeling?
It's easier to check out, to say, to not let it affect you, to be bulletproof. It's harder to say, I'm hurting.
Or to say, I care.
I care.
Really care about your opinion
right.
of me right now.
Right.
I really care. Am I showing up for you? Am I doing a mm-hmm. good job?
Well, and you're on the other side now. You're in a healthy relationship. Could you have done any of this inside of the marriage you were in?
Absolutely not.
Do you recognize that so many people are trying to have that type of relationship you're talking about now with the dysfunctional person they're with now? What's your best advice?
My best advice is it will change for you, but you do have to be brave and make the courageous steps to take that change and make that change.
Yeah.
It's never pretty. Mm. Mine was it was one for the books. I should do a memoir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should, really.
I mean, that's like a whole different show, right?
Yeah.
No, it can change. It can change. And there's always something better.
If you're at that crossroads and you're thinking to yourself, I don't know, you know, can I have that relationship that you guys are talking about inside of the partner I'm with now? I know I want that. But the first step is to look at the person you're with, and it's a question of this, my love, okay? I'm talking to you. It's always a question of willing or able, okay? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you're with this partner, and it is the ability is not there. And our toxic positivity culture has ruined it for a lot of us, that everybody's amazing. Everybody's capable.
Everybody gets in work.
I'm going to tell you something. There are locusts and there are honeybees, and some people are just not equipped, and they will never be equipped to be who you want them to be for you. Okay. So it's coming to that crossroads of taking the time to figure it out. Is this a person that you can build that with? If they go to treatment and they get their stuff together, are you going to be able to come back from this? Yes, if they do all those things and you realize that them getting better is not the end. It's the start for you to heal, to work on the control issues, to work on your codependency, to work on your withholding, to work on your trust issues, to work on your intimacy, all the things that have been affected. And if it's not with this person, to still work on those things so that you have the strength to exit. And then you can start to build this with your next partner. So I have a course for you. I've created just for this very reason. It's called Toxic Relationship Recovery, and it's at HeidiRain.com. It's a self-study course. You are more than welcome, and I encourage you to just go grab it. If this resonates with you, if you're thinking, I would like to figure out how do I heal these wounds, that's exactly what we do inside of the course. So
what's the S?
Oh, the S. Oh, we're going through them. Okay. Yeah. I forgot. I thought we were like self-esteem.
Ooh. So that kind of, yeah.
Self-esteem. Yeah. You're so excellent at most things in your life. You know, you're creative. You're wonderful. Not you, but people.
Oh,
you know, you're so, you too. Right?
That was lame. No. Weak sauce. Weak, Heidi. Really?
Because what I was going to say after that didn't apply to you. What I was going to say after that was, but your relationships suck. So yeah, I was going to say it doesn't apply to you, but you can be amazing at other things, but you think to yourself, how can I be so smart? Like I work with a lot of really smart people, sure. A lot of doctors, lawyers, sure. Entrepreneurs. And they're like, how can I be so smart? Yet here I am in this stupid relationship.
Right.
So the self-esteem takes a big hit. You second guess yourself, the gaslighting that comes in of, am I crazy?
Right.
Is this really happening?
I'm out there doing open heart surgery and I'm in this situation.
Yeah. Like, I'm in surgery and then I'm going home and my wife's fallen down or my husband's annihilated. And it's like, what am I doing here?
Addiction is not just for the person under the bridge.
Right.
You know, it wears many faces.
That's right.
And
T is trust issues.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, and that's withholding. That's what withholding is about. It's learning how to trust.
I was trying to skip over that one. That's not going to work. Did you see? I was like, yeah.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Hmm. Trust issues.
Neat.
I'll indulge. E is emotional regulation. Being able to regulate our feelings. So many of us grew up in dysfunction, are like a ticking time bomb. We suppress, 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 suppress. Mm. And then all of a sudden we blow up. And usually even though we are with alcoholics or addicts, we end up usually over drinking, over medicating. And that's,
you mean the person?
Yeah, us.
With the addict?
Yeah, us. The person that's in the relationship, the codependent person, ends up over drinking, over medicating, spilling their radical truths, which aren't really.
So you're saying they self-soothe.
They self-soothe because they don't know how to regulate their own emotions around what's going on.
Right.
I don't know how.
I've been there.
Yeah.
I've been on the floor.
Neat.
A few times. That wasn't fun.
Neat.
Yeah. Neat. Not.
Well, when I was drinking, you know, I think a lot of times people would say, oh, wow, you know, alcoholism is the thing. And I didn't resonate with that personally. I was like, oh, I just, you know, have drinks sometimes. It was like a weird gray area for me. It was like, well, I can have a glass of wine and not over drink. And then sometimes I lose my shoes and forget my name and I'm running naked in the yard. And I'm like, what's up? But for me, codependency was at the root. And the drinking was a way to medicate the codependency. And so if you, maybe you're not, you know, obviously addicted, but you know, sometimes you self-soothe to that point. And then your alcoholic or addicted partner goes, well, you do it too. Mm. You're also drinking. Like, you should worry about your drinking or you take your medicine too much, you know, whatever it is. And it's true. So then you feel like you don't have a leg to stand on when in reality, you're self-medicating your codependency.
So how do people in that circumstance trying to get a partner sober, how do they navigate? What if they have healthy limits, but the partner doesn't? How do they, you know, can they not enjoy their lives or have that part?
That's a great question. So
that's curious.
Whenever somebody's first in recovery, I think the most loving thing we can do is to make our home a sacred space. Right. So in the home, it's a sacred space. There's not alcohol. There's no drugs. I'm not drinking my wine in front of my partner. It's a sacred space. It's a safe space. It's a sober space. But outside of that, you should be able to live your life.
Okay.
You know, you should be able to do your thing, but your partner, will tell you, I don't care. Drink in the house, drink in front of me. But early in recovery, they're like a kid in a candy store that hasn't eaten dinner all day. Yeah, yeah. You know, they can't really control that, that's, you know, the cravings and all that. So we talk a lot about that on the, on this channel as well. But the R is responsibility. We are over responsible. We over function or we under function. We do all of the things. We're responsible for everything, or we throw up our hands and disappear and don't want to be responsible for anything. So it's learning what's your shit and what's my shit. What's your stuff? What's my stuff?
Yeah, I'm still stuck on the R.
Yeah, go.
I guess I do say that again.
Which, the E or the ER?
R.
Responsibility.
No, I know, but like, describe that again.
Oh, I'm either overly responsible. I think everything is my fault. Your feelings are my fault. It's my job to manage your emotions. You know, I have to walk on eggshells. That's a kid that grew up that was like, you're the reason I'm drinking, or you're the reason we're in trouble, or you're always blamed for everything. So they're overly responsible. They take on everything, or they're under responsible. Well, all your shit's your shit and I don't have anything to do with it. And almost borders on narcissistic.
Yeah.
There's a middle way.
That R really resonates with me.
How so?
It's kind of goes back to the, I give a fuck, I don't give a fuck today vibes.
Okay.
It depends, right? So like sometimes shit hits the fan. Kids, work, life, family, it's cuckoo.
Right.
And you just don't want to deal with it. You just don't want to deal. Not saying that you're, you know, jamming a needle in your arm. Not that type of like disengaging, but just I give up. I don't have it.
Right.
I don't have the energy.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you come in and you.
Yeah. That is very ACOA, adult daughter of alcoholic, because it's all or nothing.
Oh.
So the healthy is in the middle, where I create these boundaries around, this structure around my life, that it never spins too far left and it never spins too far right.
Okay.
You know? So maybe we can talk about that online.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for the most part, it's fairly consistent.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. That did not sound like a good review for myself. But
no, I think I work on each and every one of these all the time. You know, these are traits we all have. None of us leaves unscathed. Some of us have a little bit more than others. But the good news is that there is a middle way. You know, it's all so black and white in a toxic relationship. It's when it's great, it's great. And when it's bad, it's a shit show. And I want to run and disappear, or I love my life. And there's no in between. And that can be addicting, that chaos, that swing from awesome to suck, you know, all the time. And if you're in that dynamic now, it's likely not your first rodeo. You probably grew up in that and you're comfortable in that. But I want to tell you, the sweet spot is in the middle, where it never gets too crazy one way or the other. Okay. It's just in the middle. And it doesn't mean it doesn't get great. It doesn't mean it. Yeah. Right.
I don't like chaos.
Right.
Chaos makes me nervous.
Right.
It makes me uneasy.
Yeah.
I don't function well in chaos.
Yeah.
And that's when I go into shutdown.
That's right. And other people function like a champion in chaos. And the only thing they know how to do is be in chaos. So they create it, or they are attracted to it because they're like, oh God, I know this thing. I can do this dance with this person, dun, 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 you know, and they love it. I'm a person that knows exactly what to do in chaos. I always know, but that I do it for work. I don't do it in my private life.
Yeah.
You know,
I think I know sometimes, but what I mean is sometimes I just don't want to.
Want to what?
Deal with it. I want to go get a bath.
I'm just done.
I want to read a memoir. I want to relax. I've been raising kids for 30 years.
Hey, listen, you know what the coolest thing about it is? You were in a relationship for a long time that was very hurtful and not okay. And now you have a loving and supportive husband and a family that understands, and you've done all that stuff.
He deserves.
And you get to go take a bath.
He deserves.
Guess what? You go, I'm going to go do a memoir, and you got a healthy husband that goes, okay, honey.
And I still think to myself, is he just, am I being hoodwinked?
Am I being punked?
Like, does he tolerate me?
I know. Sometimes I think about Doug, like he's cheating on the side and it must not be real. But and he has like a harem.
I really believe that he's obsessed with me.
Yeah.
And he
and rightfully
it.
So.
I think he means it. And you know,
samesies.
Wow.
Samesies. I have a husband I genuinely
the lottery.
So did I. And you didn't hit the lottery. You did the work.
I did the work.
You did the work.
He was a toolbox back in the day.
And he did the work too.
We're both still working.
Amen to that. We're never done, folks. Okay. Just in case you're wondering. Anyway, we hope this has been enlightening for you tonight. If you have questions or you want to talk about parental alienation or what happens when you leave that toxic relationship and you worry about the kids and you're up for that and you're open to that, I'm sure you can request that and we can figure that out.
Or if they want more Heather time.
Yeah, they always, who doesn't want more Heather time?
I could swoop back in next time.
We have very, very Heather. She's still very Heather.
I hope I did okay, guys. This is my first podcast.
Guys, can you please tell her and give her some love that she did amazing?
I will strap on a bass and go play.
I was like, what the hell?
I'll go put a strap on.
I'll strap something on and just dangle it in public. I don't care.
Everybody has their comfort level. This is like really, this experience has put me outside of
Let me tell you again and tell you again. I am so proud of you.
Aww.
Okay. You continue to surprise and amaze me.
Aww.
You continue to inspire me.
Well, you see me, Heidi.
You
see me.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
You see me and you accept me.
Yeah.
And I with you. And I think that's just.
Yeah. Well,
I hit the sister lottery. Too,
war guys. Buddies.
Oh, yeah.
War buddies.
No doubt.
Well, I love you so much. Thank you,
you
for doing this. And I hope that you come back and I hope this was helpful for you guys. Let us know in the comments, your thoughts. And it's been so cool too, just to tell some of the stories. And I'm sure if you want more stories, we can definitely tell you more stories.
Lots of those.
But we wanted to come on and serve you as well with talking about your experience. So thank you guys. We love you.
Thanks,
we
guys.
Hope you have a beautiful night. We're going to chill out a little bit and drive to the airport and pick up Dougie Doo.
Yep.
And
I need to clean. The house is a shit show.
He doesn't care.
It's a fucking cyclone. I need to take care of it.
It's all my stuff, guys. I'll go pick it up. I just come in. I'm like, just explode and put all my shit everywhere. It's got all my stuff. Got 10 pairs of these glasses hanging out everywhere because I lose them constantly. All right. Love you guys so much. Next week, we'll be back with Dougie Do, I believe. And take excellent care of yourself. If you want to know more about healing and you want to start the journey, two things. You can get the self-study toxic relationship recovery course at Heidi Rain. You can take the personality attachment pattern assessment over there for free. Or you can schedule a 90-minute session with me and we can figure out if this is your person. We actually do that all day long around here. Okay. But scoop them up. Appointments go very fast. So love you. Take excellent care. And we'll see you next week.
Deuces.
Deuces.
Deuces, yo. No. Deuces, yo.